I was hiding in the basement because I managed to get in the basement. And I remember being, she was like, she was really scared. You know, talking to the police officer, she was really scared. And I remember being, like, listening in the basement, and I was hammered. But I was like, you know, I got this moment of clarity. I was like, oh, my God, like, my wife is saying this.
Good morning, and welcome to a new season of Maritime Magazine. I'm Pauline Dakin. Our documentary this morning comes from reporter Leslie Lowe. It's called The Other Side of the Fist.
And I just remember being like, how did I get here? Sitting in the back of a police car on a plastic seat, sliding around every time they go around a turn and going, wow, I guess Mom was right. I'm going to go to jail.
I'm a freelance journalist in Halifax. And in the past, I've worked on stories about violence against women. I've written about the death of Tanya Brooks, 36 years old, murdered on Mother's Day 2009, her body dumped in the window well of an elementary school. I've written about Paula Gallant, the young mother whose body was found in the trunk of her car and whose husband has just been charged with her murder. I've also talked to counselors and social workers about all the women who don't make the headlines, the women who spend years living in abusive relationships. And as hard as it is for me to imagine, I've gotten a sense of why they find it so hard to leave. But I have never heard the other side of the story from the men who abuse. And to be honest, I never figured I would hear that perspective. I never thought I would find a man, a domestic abuser, who would agree to tell me his story.
It's weird to realize you are something you hate and you know, something that you find disgusting, you know?
I can't tell you his last name. That was part of our deal when he agreed to talk to me. I call him Jason. We met several times in the office of his court-appointed counselor. I'm still not entirely sure why he did it, why he sat there and answered any question I wanted to ask him, why he let a reporter inside his head to hear some of the awful things he's done. And I'm still not sure I understand what made a seemingly normal guy, like Jason, use violence against the person he loves the most.
Growing up, I was raised in Newfoundland.
I began by asking about his childhood.
I have two sisters. My father was a really, really hardworking man. You know, he worked in the woods all winter and lobster fished all summer. My mother basically took care of us, tried to keep us in line. And, you know, on her end, you know, we've talked about it since, and she's like, well, you know, I was just trying to keep you out of jail. Basically, what she said was the law, and there was no talking about it. And for me, I need a reason. Like, if you explain to me, I think I'm reasonable. At the time, being a teenager, probably wasn't, but, I mean, I wanted to know why. But reasons for everything were pretty much because I said so. And so that irked me. And so, you know, we started to buck back and forth. It was pretty rough. Well, my mother did not like my first girlfriend at all. At all. So we'd get, I had a room in the basement. So I was going to leave one day and I was going to go see her. And she was like, you know, no, you're not. Like, you're not going to see her. And I'm like, you're not going to stop me. Like, I don't care. You know, basically, like, you know, you feel like the Romeo and Juliet. Like, you know, you guys aren't going to get in my way. So I start coming up the stairs. And my little tiny mother, who might weigh, you know, a buck 20, she had two hands on the handrail, 2 feet up, and double foot kicked me in the chest down over the stairs. And, you know, like, she's just a little woman, and you're kind of like, where did that come from? You know, and so she was determined, you know what I mean? Like, I was staying down there. So it was, you know, it was pretty rough like that, you know, and then there'd be a lot of, you know, basically just, if she didn't like things I owned or something like that, she'd just destroy them, break them, smash them, whatever kind of thing like that. And then as I was getting bigger, well, then, you know, she had to use things that were bigger. So, you know, like a wooden spoon wouldn't work, kind of thing like that. So, you know, it was kind of whatever was big enough to try and take me down at the knees, let's say, if I was, you know, being, you know, a big teenage guy, right? So
And would you retaliate physically?
Not initially first, because like I say, it would be more like, yeah, for me, it was, she was a quicker temper than I was. So I could see her going and going, and I'm like, all right, I got to get out of this. But on the same note, I'm like, this isn't fair. She's the one with the problem, you know, was getting quieter, that voice. And into me, like, this isn't fair. This is bullshit. Like, this is not fair. So then it was just like, all right, you crossed the line first. So now whatever. You know, basically to get out of the basement, you know, I just come up again. And if her 2 feet came up again, it was to grab him and drag her down the stairs. And then I'd be like, all right, this is how crazy I am. How crazy are you? It was just kind of the way it was supposed to be, because there was no point of reference. Like, you know, it's not like dating or being married and divorced, you have no frame of reference. Like, this is my entire world, and this is the way every family is. So you kind of, you know, when you get out on your own, then you're, you know, a young adult, you go into relationships with other adults, and you expect and you think that this is the way it's supposed to be. Like, for her to know I'm serious, or, you know, him, you know, to know I'm serious, this is the way I need to act. I'm very embarrassed to say this, but I will. Like, where it pretty much got to the end was, like, she, you know, I had no privacy. Like, she'd come in the middle of my room, let's say, at night and holler and scream, just whatever. It was the, oh, yeah, she thought I was getting violent. So I had a couple hunting knives, and, you know, being in Newfoundland, and, you know, I had them in my room. Anyway, so she was like, all right, you know, I don't want you to have any of this, blah, blah, blah. So she took them. So I was like, all right, I had one left. So I went up and stuck it in the headboard over her bed when she was asleep one night, you know, to wake up and, like, just, like, leave me alone. You know, it was, you know, I was always embarrassed about that one. But that's the kind of retarded, psychotic behavior. And so by the time I was hitting 15, my father said, you know, you got to be out. He said, because if I leave here one day, either when I come home, you or your mother is going to be dead.
The man Jason calls his father there was actually his stepfather. He had the sense to see he had to get Jason and his mother apart. So Jason left Newfoundland at 16 to go live with his biological dad. He got out.
I had blind rage when I was living at home. And when I went down there, like, I remember one day I was in the kitchen making a sandwich and I was singing. And I would kind of just, I felt like it was like a slap in the face moment. Like, I kind of stopped and looked around. I'm like, who am I? Like, just all the frustration was gone. And, like, I remember just walking around, like, you know, with a cloud in my head in Newfoundland. And I go down there and just to be able to have some space and make my own decisions and just nobody pushing me. It was, I felt like a completely different person. So, you know, like, that whole part of my life just kind of disappeared. You know, I never had a temper for a number of years.
So then what happened?
I was about 22, 23. Yeah. Just started doing some general contracting jobs, working for different contractors around town.
Mm-hmm. And when did you meet your partner?
About 7 years ago, I guess. 6 or 7 years ago.
And can you tell me how you met?
Actually, I was downtown. I was drunk. Just broke up with my previous girlfriend. Was pretty upset and just started chatting with her. And then, you know, we just kind of hung out for the night. Nothing ever happened. For about 4 or 5 years, we just kind of became friends because, well, she is pretty much the female version of me.
What do you mean?
Well, she works hard. Well, not, I'm going to say good things about her, but, you know, not saying them about me, but anyway, she, you know, she's very intelligent. She's curious. You know, she's compassionate. She does have a temper. Really tough exterior, but as soft as, you know, the day is long. And she's a very committed person to a relationship, you know, and she takes commitment very seriously. And she's stubborn, very stubborn.
It started with arguments. Every couple argues, right? Then there was grabbing. Later, pushing. Shoving. I've heard the story before. Domestic abuse counselors explain the rough blueprint. How women are socialized to be caregivers, to keep their relationships together. How abusive relationships, they aren't abusive all the time. And there are plenty of happy times when women see the partners they fell in love with. How ending an intimate relationship is deeply complex, and there's no rule book for knowing what to do. For example, how many times would your partner have to shove you or call you names in front of your children for you to leave? Sure, you can say once and you're out the door. But if you start to think about losing your home, possibly losing custody of your kids, half or more of your income, and the person you're closest to in the world, things can change. I know these issues inside out. And this time I was hearing it from the other side, from Jason's perspective. How his wife was dealing with an increasingly abusive relationship, how she was taking the blame, and how he was letting her do it.
You know, obviously, you know, me not wanting to point the finger at myself, I kind of felt the same thing. It was like, it was 50-50, you know, because nobody wants to, if there's a reason not to blame yourself or look at yourself as, you know, a source and cause and reason for problems, then, you know, you'll take it. Unfortunately, I did, you know, and I guarantee I would be looking for some kind of out. So if anyway, she's like, you know, felt, yeah, you know, it takes two to tango, any kind of line like that, I'd be like, okay, you know, and that's completely, completely unacceptable. You know, like looking at things now, like it's, you know, 'cause what I've learned about, you know, what abuse is in a relationship, you know, it's, it isn't something that two people can take blame for. I mean, it's not the way it works.
What happened?
Well, there was, we went to a show together, and we'd gotten in a bad argument.
Do you remember over what?
Yeah, she thought I lied about something. It was I would say, you know, the root of a lot of problems, alcohol. I was drunk, and, you know, she thought I'd taken some drugs or something like that, which, you know, I hadn't. And like I said, for me, my anger comes from frustration. So she was completely convinced that I had, and I was like completely honestly convinced that I hadn't. And so we did get physical, and I backhand her across the face. And, I said that out loud.
That night in the car, did you know that what you did was wrong? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's well put, well played. Yes, absolutely. And the reason why, you know, I'm absolutely guilty, and, you know, it's different from, you know, what happened in my childhood, is that, you know, there were, you know, I've come to be aware now, you know, there were, you know, leading indicators, you know, there was things running up to that. It wasn't like, you know, when that happened, I had to go all the way back to my childhood, let's say, and, okay, explain this behavior. You know, that was kind of, there were things that were inappropriate that happened beforehand. And that was kind of the culmination or the peak, you know, or the point of no return. So definitely, I mean, yeah, like, you know, I couldn't claim ignorance on that, for sure.
I think that violence and abuse can be a learned behavior, you know, that people wouldn't have probably come up with this on their own, that they've experienced it in the past. And what happens to young children is they learn what they see. And often people that I've, the men that I've met that will tell me that that there has been abuse in their past, and they swore that they would never ever use it in their own relationships because they understand the effects of it, the hurt and the pain, and not always the physical hurt, but the emotional and psychological pain of abuse. And so, of course, they wouldn't want to inflict that on anyone in their lives. And yet, they find themselves in a situation where they are. Jane Donovan, I'm the men's counselor at New Start Counseling. New Start is a counseling center for domestic abuse and violence.
Jane is Jason's counselor. He met with her on a regular basis for a year and a half as part of his sentence. The judge in his domestic assault case gave him a choice: New Start and community service, or jail. He picked New Start. In fact, 90% of New Start clients are sent to the agency by the courts. Jason has finished his therapy now, but he still checks in with Jane from time to time whenever he feels like he needs to. He calls it batting around ideas.
Like the times before that with the shoving and the pushing and the grabbing, you know, I genuinely, like I said, I was like, okay, that's never going to happen again. And I felt like I was being honest, and I was doing, like, I'm just not going to do it. That was my method. That was my solution. But the, like I said, the strange thing is afterwards, she told me she wished she hadn't called the police. And I was like, what? You know, she's like, yeah, it's just a pain in the ass. You know, you got to go to court and you got to do community service, this and that. And I remember being like, whoa, like, this is not good. You know, and this is not good. You know, like, if you feel that way, like, you know, it kind of scared me to think, like, once again, I don't think she took responsibility for that because she knew I was way out of line. But, I mean, the fact that that was on any level at all okay in our relationship, you know, I was just like, I felt very at a loss, like, but I don't want this, you know, this isn't what I want in a relationship. Like, this is no, like, but like, where do I go? What do I do? You know, the thing is, once, once I was arrested and, you know, once I went before the judge, you kind of felt like, oh, finally something's going to be done and I don't have to do it. You know, like, to be honest, I didn't have the strength in my personality, let's say, to walk into some psychologist's office and say, hey, I'm here to, you know, talk to you about abuse of my wife. And, oh, yeah, you want $180 an hour? Okay. Yeah, I got that here. Like, I'm sorry that may seem shallow, but it's true. But the decisions were made for me, you know, so, you know, once I came here, I had no choice. Go to jail or come talk to someone. And talking to someone was preferable to jail. In my case, and I kind of jumped at the opportunity because, this isn't me. I don't want this to be me, you know. And what if I have kids, you know? Like, if it's okay for me to abuse the person I love most in the world, why wouldn't I abuse my kids? You know what I mean?
I think the most, the important thing is to deal with it, right? So that, you know, you can tell yourself, I won't do this, and then you do it. And in the case of abuse and violence, then, you know, you need to be aware of what it is so that you can recognize it so that you're able to then do something about it. And so that's the powerful point, I think, when someone decides, you know, I said I wouldn't do this and now I am. And so, you know, let's do something about it.
You know, I was repeatedly told this is not anger management, you know, very, very clear. This is not anger management, you know, and it kind of, you know, made me take even more responsibility, because you can justify and appease yourself and make yourself a little more less uncomfortable if you're like, well, shoot, half the people I know have anger problems. Like, no, this is not, you don't have an anger problem. This is abuse. It's different. You know, we're dealing with that, not your anger. You know, the uncomfort is, or discomfort is what causes change. And so going through the counseling, it, you know, it made me realize that in a lot of parts of your life is that You know, if you're sitting in a chair and you're on a rock, you know, you're going to move because you're uncomfortable. If you're sitting in a chair and there's no rock, you're not going to move. So, you know, discomfort is what causes change. You know, the more you tell yourself it's okay, this and that, you're just kind of adding padding to the chair, but the rock's still there. You know what I mean? It's a temporary fix. You know, there's no long-term solution. You're basically wasting your time. You know, I've got a strategy for a successful relationship. If I didn't, I would have still been uncomfortable. You know, the abuse probably would have gotten, absolutely would have gotten worse. And, you know, so it would have been uncomfortable when my wife left me and people said, well, why? Oh, because he was beating her up. You know, or my wife, you know, had to go around wearing sweaters or something like that. Or just the absolutely disgusting feeling of who I've become, you know, and, so, I mean, really, what's more uncomfortable, you know?
Jason's wife didn't leave him. She stayed with him through the work of counseling. She seems to have forgiven him. And Jason has forgiven, too.
You know, the intention was there, you know? I guess it's almost like if, you know, you have a 3-year-old child, you know, and they, well, maybe 4 or 5, and they want to make you pancakes. And they, you know, put in a cup and a half of salt and this and that. So the intention was there. It's horrible. It tastes horrible. But you still love them for trying. And you just know that that is the best they could do with the skills they have. So my mother, you know, who all, there was, you know, drug abuse when she was young. Like just really, really tough young childhood. We just knew that that was the best she could do with the skills she had. The way I kind of live my life now is kind of being aware of those moments and being aware of run-up and kind of taking yourself out of a situation before it becomes a situation. Because once you don't care, you don't care. You know, there's no reasoning with don't care. And so it's really scary to let yourself or worry that you are going to get to that point because you can't even flirt with it. It's messed up and offensive as this sound, I still want to. Like, you still, like, you know, the only thing in a mess I can possibly compare it to, you know, is, like, say, alcohol or drugs or something where you kind of, it's like a, it's not a high in a positive way, but just, when you're so frustrated and mad, you just want to lose it, you know what I mean? And it, you know, so, you know, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it, but just throw a tantrum. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, or just let it out because the frustration, you know, it's just there. But if, you know, like I said, if you let things get carried away, you know, for me is just not letting things get anywhere near anything like that.
In a way, Jason is like an alcoholic. He has to keep a check on his temper forever. Because somewhere inside, there's still a part of him that wants to lash out. And that shocks me. Because I have to confess something to you. I like Jason. I didn't think I would, but I do. And I'll tell you something else. The first time I saw him, as he walked into Jane's office a little late on that first day, I had this flickering thought. Well, that can't be the guy I'm supposed to interview. The image in my head, the one I walked around with after covering violence against women, was of an angry, scowling bully. Someone who wore the label abuser clearly on his face. Jason? Jason is a handsome, strapping guy with a great smile. He looks you right in the eye when he talks to you. He's open and funny and deeply self-aware. And that's the point, right? Abusers don't wear signs warning partners to stay away. I knew that. I mean, I knew that, and yet, when I saw Jason, it still came into my head. I'm glad Jason agreed to tell me his story. I'm also glad I got to meet him. It doesn't change the way I feel about violence against women, about the victims of violence, or the ways women become trapped in these relationships. But but it has challenged my preconceptions about people. It also opened my eyes about some of the demons being fought on the other side of the fist.
It's just weakness in the person. Like, it was weakness in my personality. And, I mean, the last few years has been tremendously uncomfortable. Like I said, sitting here in front of you, looking at you. I mean, when you cross me in the street, you're going to know who I am. And, you know, you tell your husband, yeah, that's the guy, blah, blah, blah. You could, you know, and that would be a human thing to do. You know, and I got to live with that. But, you know, the thing is, I earn that.
For Maritime Magazine, I'm Leslie Lowe.
Leslie's documentary this morning is called The Other Side of the Fist. We'll put a link for information about the New Start Counseling Program on our website. That's cbc.ca/maritimemagazine. In the meantime, if you'd like to talk about what you've heard this morning, we would love to hear from you. Our answering machine is 1-800-565-5463. One more time, since it's a new season, 1-800-565-5463. And our email address is marmag@cbc.ca. I'm Pauline Dakin, and this is Maritime Magazine. Next week, the story of a homegrown Johnny Appleseed following a proud family tradition of reforesting local communities. The CBC's Melissa Friedman will have that story. Until then, for me and producer Christina Harnett, thank you for listening.